We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land and pay respects to elders past, present and emerging. We recognise their connection to country and their role in caring for and maintaining country over thousands of years.
These stories are those of everyday heroes, of parents or siblings who go to extraordinary lengths to give their children a home in which they can not just survive but thrive. We're so glad you're here with us to listen to PEDS Small Talk.
Hello and welcome back. I'm so glad you've joined us again for some more PEDS Small Talk, which, let's face it, if you've been listening, you probably know that this is a little bit more than small talk on here. And in this episode, it's no different. We are chatting with Kate. I reached out to Kate after I saw a social media post of hers that described an interaction she had following an appointment with her daughter. It really made me think about the language and the words we use as friends or health professionals when people we support get vulnerable with us. We really wanted to explore this further with Kate and understand how we can be more aware of this in daily life. We really appreciate Kate's honesty and candor, and we are sure that this episode will strike a chord with you too.
So really excited to chat to you today, Kate. We like to get our guests to introduce themselves a little bit. So just maybe, would you like to let us know a little bit about yourself and your family and maybe about the beautiful area of New Zealand that you live in before we get started?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Kate Ivey and I live on a sheep, beef and deer farm. We're about 10 minutes from Twizel, which is in the middle of the South Island, sort of halfway between Christchurch and Queenstown. My husband's a full-time farmer, which, as you know, that means not 40 hours a week, like 80 to 90 hours a week. And we have three children. They are 13, 11. He's at boarding school and eight, nearly nine. And I founded Dedicate, was it 7 years ago, which is the online fitness community with for rural and regional women, mums, and then those that don't have time for the gym. So short and effective workouts people can fit into their lives. And that's been amazing for me for my own development and having something, well, obviously it contributes to the family as well. And also, you know, having something for me. And I was thinking about it the other day when my daughter was having a meltdown. My eldest has ASD. She was having a meltdown and so I was able to work on my business while I patiently waited for that. And I was thinking, what if I didn't have my business, what would I do in those little times?
I had a bit of a look at what you do and I thought, gosh, that's like, we are basically, Sarah and I are like your avatars too, by the way. We're like busy rural mums with no gyms nearby that have no time. So it looks amazing too, because I love how you just encourage people to get out in nature as well and obviously enjoy the beautiful surroundings that we have by living on property and on farms and, you know, using what you've got. So good on you for putting that together. And it looks like an amazing program. We probably should look at that a bit closer, shouldn't we, Sarah?
Yeah, it's just down to earth and real life, you know?
Most of us, when we're in rural places, we don't have access to a lot of the different things that you do when you're in metropolitan places. So we do have to think outside of the box for sure. I'm just wondering if, like you mentioned your daughter who has ASD, and she's sort of one of the main reasons that I reached out to you, because you put a post on Instagram that I came across about one of the appointments that you were in with her recently, and we'll have a bit of a chat about that particular interaction as well. But just wanted to, would you be happy to sort of describe, you know, how autism affects your daughter? Because obviously there's a big spectrum with autism and people are affected differently. And would you be happy to share as much as you feel comfortable about her with us?
Yeah, sure. So it affects her quite a lot. You can sort of tell by when a child was, sometimes you can tell by when a child was diagnosed as to how much it impacts their life. So she was diagnosed just before she was three, so quite early. She had a huge regression, which those with children with ASD will know all too well. And it's a very scary time because you've got your child and it's like they've been taken and all of a sudden their body's there. But what you knew how you know your child goes. We've got her back, which is amazing. But yeah, it's huge. It's so she can say words now. She started speaking when she was, well, she started speaking when she was like two, and then that stopped with the regression. And then she started speaking again, maybe was she about eight? And then she also uses a communication device. So it's an app on a phone, and she types in what she wants to say. But to get to that point, there was a lot of hard work with complex and PECs, which are pictures which she used to communicate. And when I say she started to talk, people think, oh, it'd be so great when your child talks, because they assume that that means if you're talking, you're saying all the right appropriate things and your pronunciation is good and you can communicate just like us, but it's not like that at all. She's very good physically, very capable. She manages herself really well, but she can't keep up with your classmates. So she's 13 and she'd be doing work at like a 6 or 7 year old would be doing. Yeah. So it's quite huge. The behavior thing. So probably one of the most challenging, and that all comes down to behavior comes down to lack of communication skills. So trying to communicate when there's a skill deficit, that's when the behaviors happen. So that's really hard because the behaviors affect all of us. And they're hard emotionally because you know that it reminds you how hard life is for her. You know, imagine not being able to communicate your needs and wants effectively. She can communicate her basic needs and wants quite well, but, you know, down to the detail and people underestimating her and people not knowing how to communicate with her. And, you know, it might be a little detail that you're wanting to get across and she can't. So yeah, it's tough for her and it's challenging for us as well.
As you were talking then, Kate, I was thinking, I have an 18-month-old and I am in no way comparing your beautiful 13-year-old to an 18-month-old, but she's just sort of trapped in this moment in her development where she cannot express to us what she needs and she's getting incredibly frustrated and we're seeing tantrums start. And a lot of that is because she can't get across to us what she needs and wants. And I was just thinking as you were talking then, as a 13-year-old who actually understands her world around her in a much bigger way than an 18-month-old, not being able to commit that would be like you're feeling trapped. And I just, you know, that's really, really challenging for her and really challenging for you as a family.
And like you say, it definitely is. She can understand a lot more than what she can say. Challenging thing for people with autism is getting confused with things. So she uses her environment a lot to understand what to do and follows what her peers are doing if an instruction's given. But things can get really confused and they take things really literally. So she can understand well, but uses a lot of her environment to help piece it all together.
Yeah, that's incredible. So Kate, can I just take you back? When you said that children with autism have regressions, is that quite a common thing to happen? And why do they have regressions?
Yeah, I can't actually remember why, but it is really common. So in our case, she stopped answering to her name. The word, she had about 50 words, I think, and she stopped using them. When I look back, they were used in a very autistic way. So yeah, it's just stopped answering to her name, stopped using the words, just sort of completely withdrew. And not knowing it was autism, I remember typing the words into Google, language regression, those exact two words. And then all this stuff about autism came up. And it was just like, yes, 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 yes. Like ticked every single box down to all the little details.
In New Zealand, so in Australia, in Victoria, we have the Green Book, which is like a maternal child health book. And in there, it's got, you know, at this stage, this is what your child should be doing and how much should be developing. Now, they're not super comprehensive. And all I came across, I'm actually doing a uni subject at the moment around child health and development. And I came across this amazing sort of red flags for parents chart. And I just thought to myself, why isn't this spoken about more for parents? Things that you should be looking out for as red flags for your kids, that you should speak up to your maternal child health, your GP about, just to raise it with them.
Got a bit of a story like that. So we have Plunkett, And when my kids were young, they used to come and visit you. I don't think they come and visit you now unless you're sort of high risk, but they used to come and visit everyone. It was amazing. Get all excited about the clinic nurse coming and weighing and all that type of thing. And I knew what the 2-year-old checks were. So she passed all the checks. So I knew that they would check if she could count to 10. And there were some other things like the criteria. And so I taught her those criteria. And so we passed. So, and especially her being my first, I wasn't as aware of things. And I was also, I think I was always deep down, I knew something wasn't quite right, but obviously I wasn't willing, ready to accept that. So I taught her those things and, you know, we passed. But I think I look back at that and I think that's testament to the two of us in our journey. You know, we will get there. She will reach her potential. Yeah.
And you'll figure it out together as well. This is really hard to go back and remember, because obviously you've moved through this phase and you're dealing with a different phase of life now. But that time when you don't know exactly what's going on, and, you know, especially when we live in rural properties and we're isolated, like we do Google random symptom and try and figure out, do we need to go into the hospital? Do we need to see a pediatrician for this? You do that because we're thinking, well, that's a trip. That's not easy for us. We're not just going to... doctor around the corner, are we going to get in? Like, it's a big deal, you know, for some of us to travel into a place and get a referral. We want to make sure sometimes that our concerns are validated. So I can actually really empathize with that point in time where you're just sort of trying to search for those answers. You're feeling like something's not quite adding up. You're wanting to look at what supports there. And so we do reach for, you know, the internet, because that's where we connect and find information.
I went through the stage where I was, obviously it's not what I wanted it to be. You know, I wanted her to be developing normally. And so I'd go through these stages where I would talk to someone and everyone had a story about someone's child who didn't speak to a certain age and they're totally fine now and all these type of things. And you go through these stages where you hold on to those and you think, oh no, we're fine. We're absolutely fine. And then the reality sets in and you, like, no, I know in my heart that this isn't right. And then someone else says something and you get this kind of like hope again, depending on, you know, and it goes up and down until we did get the diagnosis, because then you go through this process where you're like, oh no, our child's going to be different to all those others that have been diagnosed.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, that wasn't actually what I was thinking. I suppose like I was wondering whether at that point you get a level of acceptance, but I suppose you're trying to still.
But acceptance takes years and years and years. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
And there's layers, you know, layers and layers of it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You're right. Like, and I suppose it's different for different people as well, isn't it? You know, about when it might happen and at what point you might begin to sort of feel that way. And maybe it's never as well. Perhaps, you know, that's also.
Yeah, and I think there's stages where you think you're completely, and then something happens and, you know, you can't cope with the situation, or you look back and think, oh gosh, that was challenging.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I'm actually going through something with my middle child at the moment where we suspect that he sits on the spectrum at some point, probably at quite a high functioning point, but there's some things you're sort of saying that really quite resonate with me, I think, around that self-management that we sort of do and around that acceptance and those stories that people give you as well. Like, it can really just add a lot to the confusion around what is the right thing to do, like, for your child, and what's the right way to support them. And so I think I just want to acknowledge that I really resonate with what you're saying, because it is really challenging. At the end of the day, all of us really just want our children to reach their full potential and, you know, be happy and healthy.
That is exactly it.
Yeah. We're all just trying to figure out how to make it work.
Where I get frustrated with is particularly the education system here is I just want my child to reach her potential. You know, it seems like it shouldn't be too much of an ask, but it can be.
Yeah. And, you know, that's something that, you know, at PEDS we bang on about a lot, is that every child has their own potential and, you know, they're going to be different from their peers. Everyone in a classroom's potential is going to be so different. And so we have to help them reach their own individual potential. And I know that's hard in a classroom situation when you do have a lot of children of varying degrees of educational ability and, you know, different personalities. Like, I give it to teachers. That's a really hard task. But I think that if we get into our mindset, every kid is so different and they've all got their own different potential to reach. And we just have to try and help them get there. And I think as healthcare professionals, we have to remember that as well, that every child's going to be really different, that we have encounters with. And so that's where I'm going to lead now, because I want to ask you about the diagnosis of your beautiful daughter. Tell us about how that happens, because it's quite a lengthy process in Australia, as far as I'm aware. Is it the same in New Zealand?
Yeah. I was told that it was really hard to get your child diagnosed with ASD, but it wasn't for us. I went to the doctor, got a referral to the pediatrician, went in to the pediatrician. Olivia came with us, went out with the diagnosis. But it was really tough because they couldn't sort of tell us anything. They just say, yep, she has ASD, you know, in a really nice, caring, compassionate way. And you have all these questions. I really vividly remember saying, will she ever read? Well, she can. Will she write? She can. Will she ride a bike? Which she can. Will she talk? Which, well, she can. And them just looking at us and saying, we just don't know. And then you walk out. And, yeah. And you've had this. Sorry, Michelle.
How old was she, Kate?
Nearly three.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that's so challenging.
I can just see and hear how unsupported you felt at that point, yeah. That really scary time. And
yeah,
again,
needed some pamphlets and that's it. And they said someone would be in touch to do some education around autism, which was really good. That started about 3 months later though. So you just sort of off into the country and then they give you these groups that you could join, but they're all in the cities.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it might have changed because it was 10 years ago. I know in South Canterbury there was a South Canterbury autism coordinator, something like that. So I'd like to think that hopefully they follow up when someone has a diagnosis. And that makes me think, yeah, I haven't had anyone reach out for a while. And probably I've turned them away because we have done their own private therapy and I've felt supported and, you know, you can only take on so much, but probably what they need would be good is to still check in on families like that, because you never know when things are going to be like, have got tougher for us this year. So you never know when they might need that bit of support.
Some additional, resources or whatever.
Yeah, even if they've seen like they've got everything under control in the past.
Nothing's linear. So, we're all on a bit of a roller coaster here, aren't we?
And you go through different stages with, you know, being strong. And so being like, no, I can do this. And you just say positives. And then, you know, that was very much my journey for the first sort of 10 years. And it still is now, but I am getting therapy and mindset coaching, and I'm learning to maybe let some of those emotions out and ask for help more than I have in the past.
And there's only so much strength that you can muster up, because you don't just have Olivia, you have other children as well. You know, you're trying to run a farm, you're trying to manage a family. And I think that if we don't have the support around us to fill our cup, you know, in every possible way, then we can't give that strength to the ones who need it. And I think that's such a really important message. And I think, you know, that was 10 years ago that Olivia was diagnosed. Do you think that there's been, and you've sort of touched on this already, there's been huge advances for children who are neurodivergent. There's been a lot more information in the public and community sector. And I think that maybe the awareness around it is becoming greater. And so I would hope that there would be more supports. But do you think that that space has changed for you when you go to appointments, when you do have interactions with healthcare professionals?
It's really hard to say. I haven't had that many interactions, and I've had one recently because we haven't really needed so much help. I think education, which is a different sector, but that's still been tough. There's not the support that should be there. Healthcare wise, I really couldn't say enough without just speaking on one or two occasions and saying that, you know, you did see that post I posted recently a couple of weeks ago, and that blew my mind a wee bit. Yeah. So we went to the mental health unit. In this case, we went there for a purpose to get some more information so that we can make things easier for Olivia. And I listed off all the challenges we've been having recently, which are big challenges for us. And we have done a lot of work on, and Olivia's worked so hard herself the last 10 years on being able to do, you know, live in our society and not do things that are going to put anyone at risk or all those sort of things. And lately there have been some. And so I'm listing these all off, and it's pretty emotional because it's your child, you know, any mother would be like that. I was really professional listening all off. I thought, oh my goodness, I can't believe I'm even saying these things out loud without quivering. And then I got to the end and I did have a few tears. And that would be fine if I was an absolute mess, there would be nothing wrong with that either. But I wasn't. I just had a few small tears. And they got me some tissues, which was nice, and said, it's really important that you stay strong. And someone might think that they're really being helpful saying that, but I was instantly angry because I'm there explaining all the challenges that we're having, and I'm living through these challenges and dealing with these challenges, and so is she. And 99.9% of the time I'm staying strong. You have to. You've got no choice. So that really irked me, because really all I needed then was someone to say, we understand it's hard, or I'll just give you a minute, and validate the fact that it's fine for me to be emotional about these things. So it's just saying that it's really important that I stay strong. Yeah, hit a nerve. And I think, you know, I was going to say, am I being over dramatic? But I don't think so. I think it instantly enraged me. So, and I don't get enraged that easily by what other people say. So I knew, you know, that it wasn't a great thing to say. I actually had an opportunity to tell him. They rang back to give us some information. And at the end of the conversation, I said, can I please just give you some feedback? And I explained, and I said, you know, when I was upset and you said this, I don't think it was the right thing to say. What would have been a lot better was, you know, I'll give you a minute, or we understand, you know, I understand it's tough, something like that.
I'm really glad to hear that you were able to give that feedback, though. I mean, it's not easy for us to to give feedback to one another or have those difficult conversations. But I want to say that as a healthcare professional, as hard as it might be for us to hear that we have made someone feel uncomfortable or not said the right thing, we do need to hear that. Otherwise, how do we change what we're saying?
Because I'd shared it on socials and then I spoke to the person, I felt it wouldn't have been right to not say anything, because it's kind of like going behind someone's back, isn't it? And the reason I shared it on socials wasn't to get at that person, was to share some of the challenges in a way that's not putting my daughter all over the internet, but share some of the challenges that families in my position face. And yeah, just to raise awareness as well. So I felt that it would have been a bit almost deceitful if I'd had the opportunity to say something and I hadn't, but yeah, I'd shared it like so openly.
And I was just going to say also, when people say those statements like, you know, just try to be strong, or the other one which we get sometimes is, oh, don't worry about it. You know, just saying that doesn't automatically get rid of the worry or suddenly download a whole lot of strength into our body. Like, you know, just saying those things just suddenly empower people with that ability. Like it is very invalidating actually to say those. Like, I mean, if you did have strength at that moment, you'd be using it. And likewise with, you know, worry, if we had the ability not to worry and just turn it off, then you would, you know, like, it's something to consider as well. Like in our language, when we say those things, if it was that simple for a person to do that, then they'd be doing it. It's, you know, not helpful, statement.
But it is really hard to know what to say to people, isn't it? Like I get tripped up.
Yeah.
So I don't hold it against people because I find it really tough when you see someone or talk to someone who has been through something challenging that you can't completely understand yourself.
Yeah, I just think that there's like incredible learning. And it takes me back to when I first started in the intensive care unit many, many, many moons ago. And I didn't have children at the time. And I remember sort of, you know, you use the older nurses or people that you, you know, you really appreciate and you, their sort of work style. And I remember some of them would say to parents, you need to stop worrying. Like, I'm not worried. When I'm worried, then you get worried. And so I started using that. And then when I returned back to the ICU after having my first child, I remember thinking to myself, you idiot, you fool, as if you can say that to a family, don't worry until I'm worried. That was such a huge learning process for me, because as if you can say to someone, don't worry, like don't worry about it, or don't validate feelings, because what you're feeling is obviously untrue or false, or, you know, you're going over the top, or you're being melodramatic. It's not that at all. As a parent, you feel everything for your child at every stage of their life. And it's just that validation can be all you need in that moment and the time to breathe and just process. Yeah. So I think that's incredible learning for not only healthcare professionals, but for other parents to say to, you know, something to say to someone who is going through any tough time, whether it's an ASD diagnosis, whether it's a child in hospital, whether it's, you know, a child who has passed away, which, you know, we have unfortunately had to deal with in our environment. I see you, I hear you, you're validated. You know, those are so important. So thank you for sharing that.
I wonder too, sometimes, you know, whether, and like, I don't know how old you are, Kate, but like my generation as well, you know, feelings were not allowed, you know? So I wonder sometimes, like particularly that's like, I know our children get taught, like in school, feelings are a lot more spoken about than what they were when we were. I just wonder sometimes whether, like, sometimes our generation are not as comfortable with other people's feelings. And so, you know, they're like, well, if I validate it, is it going to become bigger? Is it become, you know, am I going to now know how to manage this or contain this? And I think it's a fear. And I mean, I'm extrapolating. I'm sure not everybody feels like this, but I do wonder that sometimes, like, I'm just thinking about what the examples that Sarah gives, like, are people fearful that that person's going to break? And why do we fear that? If they are at that point, should that not be something that we're there for, you know, that we can keep them in and support them in, rather than trying to keep on band-aiding it with, don't worry, don't stress, everything's fine, be strong, you know, doesn't remove the feelings or the emotions. It just potentially delays it to who knows when, and comes out another way.
Because it's always about us, isn't it? We've got to try and think about them. Like, we are thinking, are we going to be able to handle the situation? Are we going to be able to know what to say? And so, you know, try and think, what can we do for that person right here and now? And if we don't know what we can do, just letting them know, like you said, that we're here and you're validated. Yeah.
I think that's so very true, Grace. And I think that, and I spoke about this at a TEDx event on the weekend, perhaps it's not the fear of these conditions existing and the actual condition itself, but the lack of, you know, support and resources and awareness surrounding it. And maybe that's sort of, I feel that that's sort of where you had those troubles, and correct me if I'm wrong, that, you know, yes, your child's being diagnosed with something, but where are the people who are meant to be my village and my support system? Mm. Like, I've got to navigate this. That's just what's going to happen. But how do I do it? And who's there to support me? Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So do you think awareness and education is the way to support families who are going through these sort of diagnoses?
Definitely. And there's got to be a better way than giving a whole lot of pamphlets. That's it. But then at the same time, I do, you know, I'm a realist and I understand that our health systems are under a lot of pressure and getting enough people in the workforce and all that type of thing. It is such a process to delve through. You know, a lot of the times there are resources out there, or there are people out there, but you don't know they exist.
Yeah.
And you're not sure how to access them. Yeah.
So if you were to say to a healthcare professional something that could support families who are going through a diagnosis like you did with Olivia, what would be your piece of advice?
Yeah, I'd say
for families.
Yeah, reassuring them that there's help and support available and letting them know who can help and support them. I think making sure Vivia, obviously you need time to process too, but making sure there are supports available in a timely manner. I think checking to see where they live is huge, and not just assuming everyone's just in the city and they're going to be able to have a lot of support around them and access a parents group for...
Oh, that's so important.
Little things make such a difference for me when, you know, living out here. If they even just say, oh, I see you're near twice, or we'll find a time that maybe you can get in here in good time. And they just go the extra bit of effort. And I think that has got better than when we first started. You know, when we first started, people say things like, oh, just come back tomorrow. And you think, well, I can't just come back tomorrow.
So for parents then who are going through the same thing that you have gone through, how can they advocate for themselves and, you know, be able to access these resources? And what piece of advice would you give them?
To access, you know, I need to look back and go, what did we do? What could have we done better? I think I didn't want to travel into cities to meet others because it was so far. And I also took on this, I can do it all myself sort of attitude.
Yeah.
Sorry, not quite. I can do it all myself, but I'm strong. I'm capable. I didn't like the idea of going to a group and people feeling sorry for themselves. For some reason, I was assuming that that's what people would be doing. So my advice would be to go to all these things. And even if you're in the country, go to one, because that's something I've learned in business as well. You never know when you're going to meet someone who's going to be an amazing support for you. And even though, you know, like the pathway to where you're going just opens up, and know that there are things out there, but a lot of times, people you talk to have their own agendas within their role. So someone might say these are the only things that there are to access, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's true. There potentially are other things, whether it's private or whether it's government funded, that you can access. An example for us was we did ABA therapy. We've just finished and we're doing a slightly different therapy that we're about to start, but it's along the same avenue, and we're using a company, both times company based in Australia, and it's changed our lives. It's not government funded, which makes me so sad, because I think of all the children out there who aren't reaching their potential because they haven't got enough support. They haven't got the tools to know what to do for an ASD case, for education, for behaviour management. Sorry, I forgot. I lose track of what I was even answering, what question I was answering.
I do the same thing. Oh, don't worry, Kate. No, we do the same thing. You're doing a really good job.
Hold on, I'm meant to type that.
No, you're telling us about the resource.
So, yeah. Yes, resources. So yeah, so definitely go to the things and ask the questions and find out what there is, because there's likely more than what people are telling you.
Yes.
And I think, when you link into those groups, what you're sort of touching on, you might actually find someone who's navigated it and they're a few steps ahead of you. Because as you mentioned, the services can be disjointed, and I'm sure New Zealand is the same as Australia in this way, and they don't speak to each other. And you wonder why, because it makes much sense that they should, but they don't. And this is the frustration that Sarah and I feel too. Because what we try and do is be the gap that fills the services that don't speak to each other, basically. Because, you know, you're right that they might only be recommending part of the picture, and there's actually a whole lot more that you can tap into. And it could potentially also have funding, and sometimes a parent knows where to get that from. It's like networking for children with chronic health conditions. It's like a special kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And if there's mothers out there going through a similar thing that I went through and you're not ready to, I understand that. I wasn't ready to do that. So, you know, you can say, go and do all these things. And I did all these things. I just, for some reason, the idea of a mother's group did. But again, it was probably that barrier. If it was in my local area, then that would have been different. But having to drive 2 hours away adds another element of.
And so I was actually asking earlier, you know, when you talk about acceptance, is it time that brings you to an acceptance, or is there anything in particular that supports your acceptance of a diagnosis?
Yeah, it's time, and I think it's also your own personal outlook and making sure your mindset is one that's positive, and we can't be positive all the time, but looking at it through the lens of, like, for example, what's helped me is being neurotypical is not the be-all and end-all either, you know? There's challenges that neurotypical people face. So sometimes I think we can feel like it would all be taken care of if they didn't have this diagnosis. But actually, life is challenging anyway. So in some respects, life is easier for Olivia. Not in many, but to some, you know, in some respects it is. So I think looking at it from that way, and what I've found is just being really grateful that you have your child. And I think that's what's hard as well. If people give you any pity, it's really hard to swallow because it's offensive. So you take it. So it's really hard because they're asking you to validate us, but we don't want pity, because basically you are saying that we wouldn't want our child, or you wouldn't want to be in our situation. And we absolutely love our children, all of them. And we are fiercely defensive of our children with special needs, especially. So if you pity us, then it is offensive. Does that make sense?
Oh, 100%. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, nobody wants to receive pity. I don't think anyone wants to be on the receiving of that. And you're right. Like, I think that, you know, Olivia is a human being in her own right who, you know, with all of the incredible supports that you've resourced for her, is going to reach her full potential. And yes, that's hard sometimes and it looks different, but, you know, she's an amazing human being of her own right, and that should be celebrated, you know. And
yeah.
She's an incredible part of your family and, you know, all those things. So, you know, but these can be hard and they can be great at the same time. Like, you can have multiple these existing. It's hard for people to understand sometimes when it's complicated, but it can be really hard and you can also be really happy. So there can be, and that's what the complicated thing, isn't it? You know, that they are all existing at once and you have to live in that.
I think with my journey, I found, sorry, Sarah, I went off track with your acceptance question, mostly because I found it hard to answer. And then I thought of something else you'd be interested in. But I've found and I don't know if you can relate to this, but compared to my neurotypical children, is the highs are higher and the lows are lower. So you're sort of quite up and down. And some of the things that you really celebrate when you have a child with special needs, other people are just like, what? Like, you know, I might just be something tiny, really tiny, and you're just like, oh my gosh, this is just amazing. And you're emotional and so happy.
Well, you know, it's probably something she spent a lot of time trying to master, a task that perhaps for a typical person you take for granted. But, you know, for her, it's something really challenging to master. So, yes, we're going to celebrate those things, aren't we? Because, you know, as Sarah says, you know, every child has their own unique potential, and you celebrate what are unique to them, you know, that they achieve those milestones whenever they are. They might look different. Mm. That's just the only thing. They might just look different. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the most perfect example of a parent who is, you know, allowing their child to reach their fullest potential. You've just literally highlighted exactly what we all need to do for all children individually. So that was beautiful. Thank you. You didn't go off track. You gave us a beautiful example of what you're doing and how well supported Olivia is. So, you know, I think celebrate your role as a parent and, you know, what you're doing for her, because she sounds like an amazing girl. And, you know, you sound like you're doing an amazing job caring for her, loving her and supporting her to reach her fullest potential.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I think probably we're coming towards the end of our time. Sarah and I have made an agreement to try and stay on time because
it's so hard, isn't it?
I love a good chat.
Really enjoyed speaking with you today, Kate, like just hearing your insights. And I think, you know, it's just really valuable experiences to share, because, you know, the fact is you probably are not alone in this. Like, there's probably other people who are feeling some similar things at different points of their journey with their children. So, you know, just knowing that you're not alone, and it sometimes can be validating even on its own. So just thank you for sharing your story, even though it might have been a little bit difficult at times to go back to some of those places. And we spoke a little bit as well about what charity you might want to just give a shout out to. And you thought maybe one over here in Australia came to mind?
Yes. So a Dedicate member got in touch to see if we could sponsor, and we're giving away a 1-year membership. And it's for the Isolated Children's Parents Association Queensland State Conference in Townsville on the 4th and 5th of June 2024. So that is being organised partly organised by one of our Dedicate members. So I thought that was a good opportunity to, do a shout out. And I also wanted to thank you guys as well, because the posts I shared on socials and what I do share is, it's hard to know what to share and what not to share. I want to keep my children's, I want to protect them. I don't want to feel like I'm using any challenges that they face to like my advantage financially or whatever, to get exposure on socials or whatever it is. But I also want to help others. And I also know it's an important part of me helping women with their exercise as well, because for them to know that I've got a lot of other things going on in my life as well, and that exercise helps me, and it's a part of what I do. It doesn't take over. We can't balance it all. And so when you guys got in touch to see if I could share, it just made me think, yes, I'm doing the right thing by sharing a bit every now and then. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're of course welcome.
Oh, thank you so much, Kate.
That was an amazing episode with Kate. Really enjoyed chatting to her. So Sarah, before we finish up, I just wanted to see, did you have any take-home messages that you wanted to share with everyone regarding that?
Yeah, what an amazing episode. And I think that this episode will resonate with a lot of families who might be going through a similar diagnosis, but also other diagnoses with their kids. And so the thing when we say, what we say to someone when they receive these diagnoses. So she was talking about how she's been told recently that she just has to be strong. And I think as parents, we know we have to be strong. And that's just part and parcel of being a parent. We're strong every single day. And like she said, for 99.999% of the time, she is strong. But there are times when you don't have to be. And I think that we need to be really careful with our words and our language around people who are struggling or who are going through challenges. And number one, validate those feelings in a really meaningful and empathetic way. So validate them, and then provide them with a moment to process, and then provide them with meaningful and appropriate resources. So they were my three really key take-home points from Kate's message today. And what an amazing person who's doing, you know, great things for her community. And I'm sure we'll see her more in this space as time goes on, because she's got a lot of wisdom and a lot of experience. So an amazing episode.
It was. So thanks everyone for joining us, and hopefully you join us again next time.
Bye. Well, everyone, that's it for today. Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of Pete's Small Talk. If you love this episode, we'd be so grateful if you left a review, subscribe to our podcast, and followed us on social media, where you are guaranteed to find life-saving tips and tricks for keeping your little ones safe. See you next time.